1,000 delegates gather in Philadelphia for the Republican National Convention with their more than 2,000 alternates. The majority of delegates assembling here are more conservative than George W. Bush has sought to portray the Republican Party. This according to a New York Times CBS News poll of those delegates. On a host of important issues, from affirmative action to environmental concerns to abortion, the poll found that delegates stand significantly to the right of much of the nation, and even to the right of rank-and-file Republican voters. In fact, a majority of the more than 2,000 delegates describe themselves as somewhat or very conservative. The delegates, by and large, supported large tax cuts and school vouchers, opposed gun control, curbs on trade, environmental safeguards, abortion rights, prescription drug subsidies for the elderly, and campaign finance regulation. In one notable exception of the contrast between the delegates and Republican voters, the poll, again conducted by the New York Times and CBS, found that fewer than half the delegates said they supported mandatory child safety locks on firearms.
Meanwhile, the Democrats launched the first of a week's worth of critical TV ads on Sunday, beginning with an attack on Dick Cheney before going after George W. Bush's record as governor of Texas. Democrats chose the week of the Republican National Convention for their first negative ads of the general election, trying to counter the positive storyline that Bush and the GOP will project. It's an early start to what many expect will be a hard-fought contest, and the ads are costing $3.5 million over the next week as they're targeted to 17 battleground states that are considered toss-ups right now.
And in other election news, though, from another country, Peru's prime minister warned that organizers of demonstrations that left 6 people dead and more than 80 wounded on Friday when President Alberto Fujimori was inaugurated could be held responsible and prosecuted. The colonial center of Lima was converted into a smoky battlefield during the inauguration of the 3-term president, who many call dictator, as thousands of demonstrators charged police barricades, threw firebombs, and vandalized government offices. That's how the government described it. You may remember on Friday on Democracy Now, we spoke with a number of the protesters who emphasized that they were nonviolent and that it was the government that was being violent towards them.
And this news from Portland, Oregon. 18 men who were sickened last year while building an incinerator in the Umatilla Chemical Depot are accusing the Army of hiding leaks of highly toxic nerve and mustard agents on the day of the incident. The lawyer for the men said they're seeking an injunction to halt the construction of the incinerator in eastern Oregon until safety protections are in place.
And this news about former UN Arms Inspector Scott Ritter, once accused by Iraq of spying for the United States. He returned to Iraq this weekend to film a documentary about weapon sites and the impact of UN sanctions. Ritter told the Washington Post that President Saddam Hussein had agreed to give him and his crew access to weapons facilities throughout Iraq with the aim of judging whether Iraq had rebuilt its arsenal since the inspectors left. Ritter resigned from the UN Special Commission, UNSCOM, then in charge of Iraqi disarmament 2 years ago, accusing the United Nations, United States, of not being tough enough on Iraq when it violated Security Council resolutions. A former Marine Corps intelligence officer, Ritter has repeatedly denied that UNSCOM was turned into a U.S. spying agency to topple Saddam. But months after his resignation, Ritter said Iraq no longer had a significant capability to use any weapons of mass destruction. He has said Washington and the United Nations should reassess their positions, not insist on 100% disarmament, and stop killing the children, with more than 500,000 dead as a result of the sanctions.
And this news from Caracas, Venezuela. Venezuelans voted yesterday in a general election to give incumbent President Hugo Chavez 6 more years to carry out his peaceful revolution. Private exit polls gave Chavez, a charismatic populist who shot to fame in a failed 1992 coup, 54% of the votes cast, compared to 34% for his rival.
And this surprise news at the last minute in Israel: Shimon Peres was defeated as president of Israel. He was defeated by a right-wing candidate.
And you see why you should vote for me. censorship of media and industry. Make my place in the polls, and the rich man of me.
Samsara of San Francisco, the Star-Spangled Dollar. And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in Philadelphia, as we bring you 5 days of special coverage of the Republican National Convention about to kick off at the First Union Convention Center.
Yes, Amy, and I think we're in for an amazing week this week here in Philadelphia, the cradle of the American Republic, and I think a lot of the founding fathers, with all their failings and shortcomings, would be shocked at what the political process has turned into in the United States. It's basically going to be a huge show by the Republican Party. But at the same time, we will be covering both the shadow convention occurring in West Philadelphia, as well as all of the many protests in the streets that are far more representative, perhaps, of what are some of the concerns of the American people.
That's right. This is two things, I think you could say. It is a coronation, as will be the Democratic National Convention. We obviously already know who the candidate for president of the party will be. In the case of the Republicans, the Texas Governor, George W. Bush. In the case of the Democrats, Al Gore. But this is also a tremendous opportunity to consolidate financial power. That's what this 4 days of conventioneering is all about. There are no decisions in the sense of who will be the leader of the party taking place. It is a chance for corporations like Philip Morris, like Enron, corporations that are here in force in every hotel, the corporate executives or the regents, a new class of contributor, many of them staying at the Four Seasons Hotel in Philadelphia. It's here that they get to show their power and, well, grease a few wheels.
And as for the 2,066 Republican delegates, we have some polls that give us an idea of who they are. One in five admits to be having a net worth of $1 million or more.
Wait. One in five of the delegates. 2,066 delegates.
Right, are millionaires. One in five are members of the NRA. And over half admit to either owning a gun or having a family member who has a gun in his house.
Well, that can be topped in our show, because later in the program we'll be going to billionaires for Bush. So, well, you won't have to hold on to your pocketbooks. They've already got the money. We're going to go now, speaking of money, and this, I have to say, incredible first-time event that is taking place in community media. We are broadcasting on community radio stations around the country. We are broadcasting on public access TV stations, cable stations around the country in a first-time ever national broadcast that will be going on for the whole week and the whole week of the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles. And we're broadcasting to 2 million homes through Dish Network. At the same time, we're live streaming on the web, and if you want to be able to hear us on the web, we are unveiling our website today at www.democracynow.org, Breaking with Convention, Power, Protest, and the Presidency. This is a multimedia extravaganza, a chance to reach people all over not only this country, but the world. Yesterday, I had a chance to go over the convention center where they're setting up, and bumped into, because there's a lot of face-to-face contact at those conventions with people you don't normally get to talk to, the chair of the Republican National Committee, Jim Nicholson.
It's just corporations buying and selling the presidents and the delegates. So you're talking about raising an amount of money that has never been raised before.
Who are you with?
My name is Amy Goodman. I'm with Pacifica Radio.
Are you recording this?
Yes, we're recording.
Okay. I say to them the fact that over the last several conventions, 22% of the people in this country have made up their mind how to vote based on the national conventions of the parties. That makes these conventions very relevant to Americans. Over 1 out of 5 decide how to vote based on a convention.
But you have the top corporations like Philip Morris, Microsoft, involved with major litigation. They are the top contributors to the Republican Party. How is anyone to think this is anything but buying legislation that's favorable to them that low-level criminals cannot afford?
Well, when a corporation puts a billboard up or a television ad that somebody sees, do you think they're buying legislation? Corporations have to advertise. They have to sponsor things. They have to project their mark and their trademark and their business position. I mean, it's no different than that. They entertain. They try to get people familiar with them. A convention's a great place to do that. There are 45,000 people have come to Philadelphia for this convention.
But regular people cannot get into these events. You need all sorts of credentials to come to any of the corporate-sponsored events.
It depends on what event you're talking about. For example, we had an event last Thursday night in a parking lot where we had hot dogs and popcorn, and we dedicated a mural to the people of the city of Philadelphia talking about the Underground Railroad. And we had people from all over the city of Philadelphia. There was no admission to it. They filled up a parking lot. There's a picture of it in the Philadelphia paper today.
But you're getting a level of sponsorship now that you've set up a whole new category called the Regents for these top-level contributors. What about the criticism that this is no longer about democracy? This is about paying for legislation and getting it.
Well, there's no link between people supporting the party and its purposes, which is to inform the American people what it stands for, in legislation. I mean, every contribution is reported. If it's illegal for someone to attempt to buy legislation. If there's some congressman or senator or somebody that somebody thinks is on the take, that's against the law, and they ought to be prosecuted.
What about the latest controversy over Dick Cheney not voting in support of anti-apartheid legislation? What does that say to people around this country, not just African-Americans, but people who care about democracy?
Very good explanation. When he voted the way he did, he noted that the American National Congress was closely identified with the Communist Party in South Africa and the Communist Party elsewhere. He has said, and he said today, that he is a great admirer of Nelson Mandela, and that vote might be very different today if he were casting it today, with the ANC being what it is today. Thank you.
Last question. That is the issue of Dick Cheney not supporting a ban on plastic guns that even the NRA supported, not supporting a ban on cop killer bullets.
Those bullets are used by a lot of police forces.
And you were just listening to Jim Nicholson, who is chair of the Republican National Committee, and he is the one who is organizing this week's extravaganza here in Philadelphia. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. We'll be your hosts for this week on community radio and on public access television and the Dish Network, bringing you the voices from the convention, as you heard with Mr. Nicholson, to the streets.
Yes, Amy. And of course, this is a return home for me of sorts. I've lived in Philadelphia for many years. I was a reporter here. And interestingly enough, John Street, who is the mayor now, was, I remember him from decades ago when he was a militant protester. He's changed dramatically since those days when he was fighting for redevelopment and community control in North Philadelphia. Now he's the mayor in charge of keeping the peace for this convention. And of course, Philadelphia is unique in a lot of ways. It's the 65% of the housing in Philadelphia is owner-occupied, the largest percentage of owner-occupied housing in the United States of any major city. And it's a city that is about 50% African-American and about another 10%, 5 to 10% Latino. And John Street, of course, is the second African-American mayor in the history of the city. And I think that we're going to see a real conflict between this administration, which considers itself more of a liberal, reform administration, and the protests in the street, because many of the people sitting in City Hall used to be protesters 20 years ago, and it's an interesting change in what's happened here in the city.
Speaking of the streets, there are major demonstrations planned for every day this week. As we speak, I understand there is a direct action taking place of people who are protesting the continuation of the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. And we'll let people know what happens. We have a problem in the city when there are protests, and that is cell phones go down on a regular basis. Electricity can be cut off and then put back on. We've seen it in this country and in others, and we'll let people know about that. Also, the only one of the unpermitted demonstrations, the city refused to give a permit to the demonstration against homelessness and poverty that is set for today in Philadelphia. We hope to be joined by Sherry Hankala, the founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, which is a group that set up a Bushville in northern Philadelphia to portray the level of poverty in the city. Interestingly enough, in that area, in Kensington, I believe in Philadelphia, 44% of registered voters voted in the last election. That's considered high in this country. We're talking less than half. In Kensington, 17% of registered voters, and that's just registered. Think of how many aren't registered, actually voted. We are talking about a tale of two cities. And as we talk about those two cities, let's look at some of the figures. More than 240 corporations, government agencies, and other sources have poured in more than $40 million for the Republican National Convention. Bell Atlantic gave $3 million, AT&T, millions of dollars, Microsoft, $500,000, tobacco giant Philip Morris pumped in $250,000, weapons manufacturer Lockheed Martin doled out $100,000. The list goes on and on. The city of Philadelphia itself gave a whopping $7 million. Interesting to note, Philip Morris, Microsoft, these corporations are involved in litigation, have legislation before Congress. Don't think there's any mystery about why they're pouring the money into the parties as well as the party here in Philadelphia. When we come back, we'll be joined by some of this city's, minority elite. That is the billionaires for Bush. They'll be joining us. And then we're going to be talking, we'll be joined by the billionaires for Bush. And we also then will be talking about a very serious issue, and it is the theme of tomorrow's protests, police brutality and the death penalty. We'll be joined by Ramona Africa, as well as writer and professor Lynn Washington. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in the middle of Center City, Philadelphia, where hundreds of video and radio activists have come to the city as they went to Washington for the IMF World Bank protests, as they went to Seattle in November and December of 1999, saying that they weren't going to let this corporate global uprising against, or the global uprising against corporate power, be covered by a corporate lens or captured on a corporate microphone. And so we broadcast from the center of that independence. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
This land is our land, it is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadores to the Exxon Valdez, this land's our manifest destiny.
As I was stalking all pockets of poverty for an abandoned warehouse I should make my property, I'll let the artists bring in the yuppies. Yeah, this ghetto will make a profit for me.
This land is our land, it is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadores to the Exxon Valdez, this land's our manifest destiny.
There's a river that's flowing I've got to mine it. Oh, yeah, this land will make a profit for me.
This land is our land. It is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadoras to the Exxon Valdez, this land's our manifest destiny.
It was a peaceful culture that had desirable property. Oh, yeah, I signed some treaty, but that ain't gonna stop me. No, I've tricked and murdered their land, I've plundered. Don't stand in the way of profit getting to me.
This land is our land, it is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadoras to the Exxon Destiny.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez, broadcasting from the Independent Media Center in Center City, Philadelphia, just a few miles away, the convention center where the Republican National Convention is set to begin in just a few hours. And the music you just heard, Samsara, I want to log your land. Well, we are joined right now by one of the more interesting groups rallying around George Bush this week, the Billionaires for Bush.
Or Gore.
They have taken to the streets to bring their message to the convention. They marched through the streets yesterday chanting, Bush Gore, Bush Gore. We don't care who you vote for. Well, oh, well, we've already bought them. They originally started off as the Billionaires for Steve Forbes, but now that Forbes is long gone, they've decided to endorse, well, both candidates?
Absolutely. We really don't think that there's that much of a difference between either one of them. They may differ on some policies and sometimes wear different color power ties, but we're confident that both of our candidates are deeply committed to economic inequality.
Now, we should introduce you, actually. Millie O'Neill is with us today, one of the Billionaires for Bush.
Hello.
And Phil T. Rich is with us as well.
How do you do, Amy?
Well, Phil, what do you? One of the things you said
is
that
he likes to be called by his full name.
I'm sorry.
That's Mr. Rich.
Mr. Rich, I'm sorry. Mr. Rich. I've heard you say that corporations are people, too.
Yeah. You see, I mean, for example, with the welfare protests coming up today, I mean, the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, I mean, poor women and children, they have the right to welfare? That's not the way it is. Corporations have the right to welfare. I mean, look at the numbers. Tens of billions of dollars in welfare tax breaks, subsidies, extensions on patents for corporations. But we've cut the legs out from under the federal guarantee of assistance to poor women and children. And that's why corporations are people, too.
You spoke, Millie O'Neill, last night at an R2K press conference. That's the press conference of the resistance of the protesters who come to Philadelphia. And can you talk about the message you brought to the press?
Well, the message that I brought to the press was really that we are down here celebrating our victory. I know that a lot of these people have come down here to protest the Republican Party, but we're actually very happy with them and the Democrats. We've already bought both of the candidates, and we're down here celebrating. Yesterday, we held our Million Billionaire March and really decided that it was time for us to come out in full strength and celebrate our collective power and unity as wealthy people. For years now, billionaires, we've been running this country from behind closed limousine doors, and we felt that it's high time that we come down here and show these people what we're really made of, which is money.
But shouldn't money be kept out of politics? A lot of Americans feel that way.
Oh, you don't understand. People don't vote. Money votes. I don't see any problem with that system. It's working quite well for us. Don't you think, Phil?
It's a fantastic system. In fact, you know, to those critics who say big money should stay out of politics, they don't understand. I mean, where in the Constitution does it call for a mandatory separation of cash and state? I mean, show me. I mean, in fact, politics is the best business there is. Look at the numbers. In an average money market fund, you know, we wealthy people might be satisfied with a 20% return on our investment. But in the dynamic, low-risk, high-yield world of legislation, incredible investment arena, you can expect almost over 100,000% return on your investment.
As a matter of fact, the advertising industry, that's us, that's you, then we bought them. They invested $7 million. No, that's not true. They invested how much money?
Well, the broadcast industry, I think, is what you might be thinking of, and that was for $5 million in campaign contributions. They were able to secure for themselves a $70 billion value. Free digital TV licenses were lent to them. That's, you know, some people might think of that as public property. I mean, the airwaves, do they belong to the people? I don't know. But the government, for $5 million in campaign contributions, gave that to the broadcasting industry. That is a 1,400,000% return on their investment. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. Politics as a great business for us.
And if you can get that type of return when you buy a handful of congressmen, just imagine what you can get when you buy the president.
So if big money does all this, why have an election at all?
Well, that's the beauty of democracy. I mean, we can handpick the candidates because they have to compete for our cash, and that whittles down the field to two who are acceptable to our positions. But the beauty of democracy is then you have to have an election, and that's where people come in. I mean, if people didn't vote, who would?
What about Ralph Nader and the Greens or Pat Buchanan?
Well, you know, it's a little bit hard to buy off a candidate who only has a black and white television and lives on a very small amount of money a year. But we've already bought off the Republicans and the Democrats, and we would try very hard to buy off Ralph Nader as well, but he's got a little way to go.
Every man has their price, we just haven't found what Nader's is yet.
Can you, millionaire or filthy rich, whichever of you would like to take this question, talk about your stance, for example, on child care?
Who needs child care? Hire an au pair.
Right, Millie. I like that. Works for us at home, doesn't it?
Now, when you go around and you endorse Bush and Gore, I guess you started with Forbes. Did Forbes accept your endorsement?
Oh, as a matter of fact, the first time that the billionaires for Steve Forbes ever came out to publicly support him and invite him into a photo opportunity with us, he graciously accepted.
Wait a second. He actually came and joined you?
Oh, but of course he did. He understood that we were his true supporters. He got into a photo opportunity with us.
And he heard that there were billionaires for Forbes.
He himself is nearly a billionaire for Forbes. I mean, he's become a charter member as we've gone along and the campaign has developed.
Juan, this is actually very interesting because I do understand that when they first came out with their endorsement and held the news conference, Forbes showed up thinking, in fact, there were billionaires for Forbes. Of course, there are, but that these were the ones. And he stood with them in a photo opportunity. When was it that he realized what?
That we were his actual true supporters? I think it might have been when he noticed the ties made out of money.
He got a little nervous.
Well, Phil T. Rich, how does the average person fit into all of this?
Well, it's very important for the continuation of the system. The average person should, you know, consume, vote, and die. I mean, we couldn't have the kind of system we have without that kind of contribution.
Any last words for our listeners on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! And for viewers around the country?
We would like to ask people to join us. Wear your mink stoles, put on your top hats and your black suits, and come to Philadelphia and join us. Today at 11, we'll be holding a candelabra vigil for corporate welfare at 11. That will be at the Kensington Welfare Rights Union's march.
At City Hall.
And you can also join us in Los Angeles, where we'll be holding another Million Billionaire March.
That's on August 14th at 5 p.m., leaving from Pershing Square, downtown L.A.
And please check out our website. It's lovely. It's got beautiful photo of our candidate. Our website is www.billionairesforbushorgore.com.
And our candidate is Bush Gore, and if you go to the website, you'll see a incredibly professionally done computer composite morphing of the two portrait photographs of Bush and Gore. That's our candidate, Bush Gore.
Well, we want to thank you both very much, Filthy Rich and Millionaire, for joining us today. I understand you're headed over to the Shadow Convention that's taking place at the Annenberg Center at the University of Pennsylvania, because there are many tiers of gatherings that are taking place at the Republican National Convention this week. There is the main convention that's taking place at the First Union Center in South Philadelphia. There is the Shadow Convention that is a group of nonprofit organizations dealing with money and politics. Yesterday, that event was kicked off by John McCain, who got some boos when he announced or reiterated his endorsement of George Bush, considering this was considered a counter-convention. There are the protests in the streets, and we are covering them on a regular basis, and there are the parties not only in the corporate suites, but all over this city. Yesterday, last night, a big fireworks display in Camden, New Jersey, just across the river, and there were protesters there as well. But right now, as we move from billionaires for Bush, we're going to talk about the tale of two cities. As we've said, a lot of money pouring into Philadelphia this week. More than 240 corporations, government agencies, and other sources have poured in more than $40 million for the Republican National Convention. Again, the figures. Bell Atlantic, $3 million. AT&T, $1 million. Microsoft, $500,000. Philip Morris pumped in $250,000. Weapons manufacturer Lockheed Martin doled out $100,000. And this, by the way, is only for the convention. We're not talking about these very same corporations contributing to the Republican Party, to George W. Bush, and of course, on the other side, it's to the Democrats as well. But this money pipeline flowing into Philadelphia this week is set against the backdrop of a city plagued by serious poverty. It's a tale of two cities. As delegates and journalists collect their corporate-sponsored gift bags and go on tours of the convention center and make the rounds through the corporate suites at night, a group called the Kensington Welfare Rights Union has been taking journalists and others on what they call reality tours through some of the poorest areas of Philadelphia. We're going to take that tour.
Welcome, everybody, to our reality tour. This is the sixth tour that we've done. We started them yesterday. This is definitely the most full that this bus has been. The reason that we're doing the reality tours is because we know that the spotlight of the world is focused on Philadelphia right now because of the Republican National Convention. And we want to make sure that the real issues that are taking place here in Philadelphia and throughout this country are shown to the rest of the world. Philadelphia is a city that is claiming to be back from the edge of bankruptcy, a place where people should move to, live to, come visit. That's the projection that the city wants to give to the world. But what we want to show you today is the fact the neighborhoods that are not experiencing or benefiting from this economic boom that we're having in the United States. These are neighborhoods where poverty is getting worse every day, where homelessness is growing, people are being cut off of welfare, they're not able to find jobs, and it's just a situation that is continuing to get worse. And we know that as the Republicans gather over at the First Union Center, they're not going to be talking about these issues. And we wanted to let people know that aren't at the First Union Center, that are watching their TVs and reading the newspapers and just coming to Philadelphia to visit, let them see what's really going on here. Right now we're heading to Bushville, which is an encampment that has been set up for poor and homeless families that are coming from throughout the country in order to participate in demonstrations during the convention. The numbers of people staying there are growing every day. Last night there were over 100 people that slept at the tent city. Even though it was raining and all that stuff, people were sleeping under the tents. And more people have arrived today, and we know that the numbers will continue to grow as we go further into the weekend.
And that was a tour that I took on Saturday. In the morning, there was almost no one on the bus, and then it started to fill up. This is the Chamber of Commerce was giving people a very different tour as we went up to Kensington. And again, as I said at the top of the program, Juan, some really interesting figures that we learned on this tour, like 44% of registered voters in Philadelphia voted for the last president, voted in the last presidential election. In Kensington, 17% of registered voters, and of course, that doesn't even represent the eligible voters in the city.
Well, and it's fascinating. Kensington, I know the neighborhood very well from my years here, is a neighborhood that is not only poor, but it has poor white sections, poor Puerto Rican and Latino sections, and also many African Americans live in the neighborhood. So it's actually one of the most integrated neighborhoods, but all in terms of poverty and neglect on the part of the city in terms of how the community is treated.
Well, right now we're joined by Renee Maxwell, who is a lead organizer with the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing here in Philadelphia, working with the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, which is planning a major demonstration for today. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Renee Maxwell.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about Kensington and the Bushville that's been set up.
Well, Kensington and Bushville, which has it's a symbol of what America will look like if the agenda is not changed to speak other people's needs. Right now, all across the nation, people are in need of low-income housing. And from being from Chicago, I'm seeing communities being destroyed where condominiums and market rate housing is coming up all across the country.
Now, what's been the city's reaction to the march and to your activities for today?
Well, the city's reaction has been one of maybe somewhat confused, because they're wondering exactly, you know, why isn't the GOP addressing the needs of the people? And so they're in support of the Kensington group. And at the same time, they're really optimistic.
But in terms of the city officials, I understand there were some problems in being able to get a permit.
Well, that was beyond me, because some of the groups that I've seen that has gotten permits, I'm sure that the Kensington group really do qualify for a permit. You must remember that last year, October 1st to November the 1st, we marched from D.C. to New York, and without any incidents whatsoever. So I really don't understand what the what is really all about, because of anything, this is a community. This Kensington group is family, and they are really focused on this housing crisis.
Renee Maxwell, you're here at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia. The last 8 years have been Democrats at the federal level. Of course, there's also Democrats here in Philadelphia running the city now, John Street.
Yeah.
So will you be going to the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles?
I'm pretty sure I will, because one of the main reasons, because we have to stay focused. Right now, all over the nation, housing is being downsized, and many communities are being just swept away. The big developers has come in and is just making money.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us. In the
thank
next segment
much.
Of the program, we're going to be looking at a picture of the city that the Chamber of Commerce and the corporate media has not been emphasizing, though in the last few weeks it has even come to the corporate media screens, and that is the story of police brutality. We are talking to Renee Maxwell, lead organizer with the Chicago Coalition to Protect Public Housing, joining with the Kensington Welfare Rights Union for a major protest today in the streets of Philadelphia. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
This land is our land, it is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadores to the Exxon Valdez, this land's our manifest destiny.
As I was stalking all pockets of poverty for an abandoned warehouse, I should make my property. I'll let the artists bring in the yuppies. Yeah, this ghetto will make a profit for me.
This land is our land, it is not your land. From the Transamerica Tower to the ghettos of Harlem, from the Maquiadores to the Exxon Valdez, this land's our manifest destiny.
are worth more if the forests are ancient.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in Center City, Philadelphia. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez on this first day that the Republican National Convention is taking place in Philadelphia. It will go on for 4 days. We'll be broadcasting live for five. And for listeners who are just joining us around the country on community radio stations, we welcome you all. You are joining an even larger public TV viewing audience on public access cable television, as well as the Dish Network. We are involved right now in an unprecedented project, which is the joining together of community media, public radio and cable public access television, for the first time are doing a joint national live broadcast that will last 2 weeks, this week in Philadelphia, and then from August 14th to August 18th in Los Angeles for the Democratic National Convention. And we welcome you all to this quite amazing experiment so that we can view these uprisings against corporate power not through a corporate lens, or listen to them not through a corporate microphone, but through the grassroots microphones and video cameras of independent video activists, reporters, and here in the background for viewers who are watching this and for listeners, you can hear it through your ears. We're in the midst of the Independent Media Center, which is the center of that independent media activity.
Yes, and Amy, we're going to talk now about a topic that is growing throughout the nation in controversy and importance, the issue of police brutality, and no better place to discuss that than right here in Philadelphia. The history of police disregard for the civil and human rights of people in the city of Philadelphia has existed here for back into the 19th century. During the past three decades alone, Philadelphia police stripped Black Panthers naked in the streets, fatally shot hundreds of blacks and Hispanics. Plus, they have starred in scores of brutality incidents captured on videotape. Philadelphia is the only American city where police have been sued by the U.S. Justice Department and criticized by Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. And we're joined now by two people who have had lots of experience with that. One is an old friend of mine, a former colleague at the Philadelphia Daily News, Lynn Washington, an award-winning journalist and columnist now for the Philadelphia Tribune, the oldest black newspaper in the country. He's also the director of the newspaper track at Temple University's School of Journalism. Lynn, you've been following the police abuse problems now for years. First of all, welcome to Democracy Now! It's good to see
you
again.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the Philadelphia police and the citizens of the city. A
very ugly and outrageous history, one that has been documented in numerous lawsuits, reports by internationally respected organizations, and also one that is etched into the minds of so many people of color in this city. Police abuse not only includes fatal shootings and outrageous beatings like we saw a few weeks ago with this guy Michael Jones, but it also includes a more insidious nature, which is false arrests. I mean, there have been literally tens of thousands of people who have been falsely arrested, and police have perjured themselves in court to put in prison, and also just daily racial slurs and other epithets. I mean, right now we have a very interesting lawsuit in the city of Philadelphia where three white police officers and three black police officers are suing the police force for racism. And the commissioner criticized the white officers for filing the suit and fired them. It's outrageous.
We certainly saw the police brutality of Philadelphia very clearly over the last few weeks. Another videotaped beating.
Yes.
This time we saw the videotape of the beating by police of Thomas Jones. We're joined as well in the studio here at the Independent Media Center in Philadelphia by Ramona Africa. She's the Minister of Communications of the MOVE organization, the sole adult survivor of the police bomb that was dropped on the MOVE home in 1985. The bomb was made up of C4 plastic. It killed 11 people, including 5 children. Welcome to Democracy Now! Ramona Africa. What about this videotaped beating of Thomas Jones in the lead-up to the Republican National Convention?
Well, it was shocking but not surprising to remind people right here in Philadelphia in 1978, 22 years ago, preceding the beating of Thomas Jones, preceding the beating of Rodney King, there was the beating of Delbert Africa by Philadelphia police as he came out of MOVE headquarters, unarmed, clearly not a threat. He was beat almost to death. For close to 30 years now, MOVE has been telling people about the brutality, particularly of Philadelphia police, but police brutality across this country. As you stated, I'm one of the living, survivors of police brutality. You can't get any more brutal than being bombed, having a bomb dropped on you, by Philadelphia police. It's a problem that people have complained about, for years, and the problem is that officials have never, ever been concerned about addressing or resolving the complaints of people. Their response is more brutality and intimidation. Just a day or so after the brutal beating of Thomas Jones, people complained and protested. What was the official response? For cops in the Amtrak train station to say, oh, you didn't like that beating? Well, take this. And they shot a homeless man to death because he raised a chair. If somebody raised a chair at me and I shot him to death, I'd be in jail charged with murder.
You're talking about the shooting death of
Robert Brown,
black man in the Amtrak station at 30th Street in Philadelphia.
A day or so after the beating of Thomas Jones.
Well, Ramona, I was a reporter at the Philadelphia Daily News, and I'll never forget that day, in Mother's Day of 1985, in the MOVE siege, and being there, turning my back for a second when that helicopter came and dropped the bomb on your house. And the most amazing part of that was not the fact that a city dropped a bomb on its own residents, but that I recall for over an hour as the fire in that house raged and the fire, all the fire trucks had arrived, for over 1 hour, none of the firemen lifted a hose to turn that fire out. And as a result, it not only caused the death of so many people, but then also left something like 85 homes were destroyed as a result of the city's refusal in an attempt to try to force all of the MOVE members out of the house to let an entire community burn.
2 points really need to be made here about the viciousness of what happened that day. Number one, officials tried to tell people that the cops were out there because neighbors complained about MOVE. We're telling people, use your brain. When has this government ever cared about black people complaining about their neighbors or white people or any other people complaining about their neighbors? You're from Philadelphia. You know Ethan Butler. Those people down there have been complaining for years, hollering, screaming, protesting, demanding that something be done about the drug trafficking there. Did they drop a bomb down there? No. The second thing is when you talk about the fire trucks arriving, fire department was there from ground zero, and they poured tons of water from 4 deluge hoses on our home for hours before there was a fire. But then when the police bomb ignited a fire, all of a sudden the fire department did not want to put water on our home to douse the fire. And thirdly, I cannot overlook this, when we realized that our home was on fire, we immediately tried to get ourselves, our children, our animals out of that blazing inferno. And the instant we became visible to police, we were met with the barrage of police gunfire. They deliberately opened fire on us to try to prevent anybody from escaping that blazing inferno.
And of course, I remember well the story that was leaked from the police department then, that the MOVE members had come out shooting. And I remember a long discussion.
Automatic weapon fire.
And our newspaper at the time, the Philadelphia Daily News, ran that story from police sources. And I'll never forget Bill Marimo, who is now editor at the Baltimore Sun, was then an investigative reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Bill told me in a conversation long after that, because the Inquirer did not report that story, and Bill says, Juan, your newspaper ran the cover story of the shooting that occurred in the back of that in the back of the house, as you were all coming out unarmed, and our newspaper fell for it, and we ran the cover story for the police after what actually happened there.
Yeah, they said that we came out shooting automatic weapons at them, and they have yet to ever find an automatic weapon.
You know something, Juan, there's a little footnote to that in terms of the coverage of the Daily News, because you and I were on Cobbs Creek Parkway watching the firemen sitting around.
Lynn Washington.
But the next day, I talked to one of my sources who lived on Osage Avenue. He told me that he saw police shooting at MOVE members. Mm-hmm. I reported that back to the desk, and they weren't interested in it. They said it's just hearsay at this point. We don't want to inflame the situation. So that shows the kind of... I don't know if subtle is the right word, but the way the media manipulates news to keep the public uninformed under the rubric of informing the public.
Ramona Africa, what happened after the MOVE bombing? What happened to you?
I was arrested. I was charged with everything that the police did. I mean, they dropped the bomb on me and my family. We were outrageously, I was outrageously charged with possession of explosives, assault. I mean, everything that they did, I was charged with. I was finally convicted of riot and conspiracy to riot, which merged into one charge. And I was sentenced to 16 months to 7 years in prison. I was told at the end of 16 months that I could be paroled. I could walk out of jail anytime I wanted to, with the stipulation that I had to agree to completely disassociate myself from the MOVE organization and agree not to have any contact at all with any MOVE person, something that I would never agree to. My family members were offered the same kind of deal. None of us accepted it, so I ended up doing the full 7 years in prison.
Were any police officers ever charged?
Not one official ever was charged with any crimes against MOVE on that day. Even though they admitted to certain things that they did, they were deemed to have been stupid, not criminal.
Wilson Good, the first black mayor of Philadelphia, in charge at the time. You sued.
Absolutely. And he was one of the first people to get immunity and to be dropped from my suit. The man who took all of a few seconds to okay the dropping of a bomb.
Well, we're talking about a city of several firsts. This is the home of the first convention in the 19th century here in the United States, and also the city that is the only American city whose police have been sued by the U.S. Justice Department. Lynn Washington, do you see any significant changes here in Philadelphia over time?
Unfortunately, there has been no significant changes. There's been a consistent struggle legally as well as in the streets. There have been times when the system has entered into agreements which they have broken. One instance is this. Right now, with this Thomas Jones situation, there's going to be thorough investigations. The Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department, as a result of a 1993 order from then-Mayor Ed Rendell, has 75 days in which to do an investigation. Last October, a Hispanic minister was beaten by police after he was a victim in a carjacking, which he helped police stop. Very similar to the Jones situation. They drug everybody out of the car, beat the Hispanic minister and his assistant. A week and a half ago, the Hispanic clergy of Philadelphia held a press conference criticizing the police department for its failure to complete the investigation. When they sent a letter to the police department, they got a form letter back saying, "We're having a hard time interviewing the police officers involved. Can we indulge your patience for a few more months?" So it's just a farce. The system is an absolute farce. The irony is that many of the people who are now running the system, like the mayor and his recently resigned chief of staff, know the extent of police brutality in the city. The chief of staff, the then chief of staff, Stephanie Franklin Suber, when she was a law student at the University of Pennsylvania a number of years ago, wrote a law review article on police brutality in Philadelphia. In the wake of the Jones situation, she called it an isolated incident. Lies, farce, cover up, I mean, whatever adjective you want to use, that is the nature of the system here in Philadelphia. But it's also the nature of the system across the country when it comes to police abuse. And this is something that I think is what should be highlighted at the First Union Center, getting George Bush to comment on this or not comment on it and making it an issue, because it's not just the victims, but it's the collateral damage where you have innocent people who are profiled and beaten and harassed and falsely put in prison.
Of course, the epidemic that we have of police abuse across the country in this past decade of the law and order crackdown throughout America is certainly not a topic of conversation at this convention.
No.
Absolutely not, and it's really an insult, a slap in the face of the people. And when people take to the streets to voice their complaints, to demand some action, people are treated as if we're the criminals. And, you know, it's very interesting, just an aside, that right now one of the biggest movies out is called The Patriot, one of the biggest megastars in Hollywood starring in it, Mel Gibson. And what does that represent? What is it talking about? It's talking about a group of people at the founding of this country going to war with the government, with cops called redcoats, you know, in defense of justice and what's right. And that's being applauded. It's being pushed in Hollywood. It's celebrated every 4th of July in this country. But when people like the MOVE organization and other people take to the streets and dare to demand what's right, fight for what's right, you know, when the government is wrong, we're called criminals. We're, you know, told we don't have the right to do this.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Ramona Africa and Lynn Washington,
for wrapping up
this program today. Democracy Now! Is being broadcast from the floor of the Independent Media Center in Philadelphia, produced by Jeremy Scahill, with help from Deepa Fernandez and John Hamilton, David Thompson, Lisa Shaw, also Skip Lumberg at the video camera, Linda Anacone, John Hamilton, Sanazma Safarian, and Joe Friendly. Internet production by Prathap Chatterjee, Lena Hosheno, and Derek Chung. We're being broadcast on Dish Network at Channel 9415, Free Speech TV, and Deep Dish, working with Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.